I'd like to present some work I've been doing with Ana Robas from San Diego and Guillermo Gomez Santos also from Madrid on generic ideas about when and how phase separation may take place near a magnetic phase transition. Basically, the outline of the talk. I will try to concentrate on the general features of the problem, and the talk is mainly aimed to an audience of theoreticians. But just let me keep you informed of the kind of things I will be talking about, which experiments have been done, and why we think that relevant. First of all, magnet, you can have phase separation. And there are indeed itinerant magnets. Like 6 months ago, I thought there were none, but actually, I attended a nice conference in Spain. I remember, in which a student from Cambridge pointed out to me that magnetic silicide is a case in which you have phase separation near magnetic phase transition. Of course, there is a lot of discussions about phase separation in the dot not insulator, because that is the model a lot of people have been using for high TC materials. There are a few of the most relevant references. Our main aim started is looking or trying to understand the manganese, which is a very nice model, the double exchange model, which I will discuss later, which is a very nice model in many ways. I will discuss a little bit how these things can be extended to the pyrochlore, and actually it is already hinted out in the theory work I am mentioning here. And then I think that these ideas are probably useful or can be extended to other materials. Here I have discussed a quantum critical point, discussing many other possible situations. I think Daniel Komsky has quite a few ideas in that respect. Okay, the generic phase diagram I want to discuss looks more or less like this. We have the paramagnetic-magnetic transition, which depends on temperature, obviously, and dose. And the thing is that we all know that when you cross this phase diagram at fixed doping, as function of temperature, the free energy picks up additional contribution, the condensation energy, basically, when you move into the magnetic phase, into the other phase. And that leads to a change in the specific heat, for instance, which the mean field level has a discontinuity. The point I want to make is that the same thing will obviously happen if you cross this phase diagram as function of doping and keeping the temperature constant. And then the quantity which plays the role of the specific heat, basically the specific heat stands for the second derivative of the free energy with respect to temperature. If you look at what happens as function of this variable, then you have to take the second derivative of the phase of the free energy with respect to the electron density, and that is the compressibility. So the compressibility is going to have a strange behavior near the transition. I would like to understand what will be going on there. Formally, I'm using Ginzburg-Landau's ideas. What I'm trying to say is that direction. This is your the free energy of your system, which is compact. So it has a positive compressibility. But then, when you go below the Curie temperature or the Mayer temperature, or whatever, you pick up an extra negative contribution, which at the mean field level is quadratic in the control parameter, and which will tend to make this curve look concave. So it will imply that the compressibility at this mean field level will have a discontinuity at the transition. The same thing happens at the same mean field level with the specific heat. The thing is that because of the fact that the entropy is something that has to be positive, the specific heat can never turn negative. But there is no thermodynamical arguments which tells you that the compressibility cannot go all the way below zero at the transition. So the compressibility, sorry, this is the inverse of the compressibility may go down and become very large, meaning that the system is hardly compressible, but it can even reverse its side, so becoming negative. Exactly. So this is the inverse compressibility. So here, when this number is zero, you have a very compressive, infinitely compressible system, very susceptible to any kind of perturbation. And if this thing happens to go below zero, then you have a system which is unstable thermodynamically. Now, if that happens, here let me. You and even another sketch to show you how it goes on. I mean, a system has negative compressibility when upon doping the chemical potential goes the wrong way. So if you dope with electrons, the chemical potential instead of increasing goes down. And that could happen if you have a very asymmetric density of this is that the magnetic system started with Conner's criterion of it means. So it may happen that when you feel continue, I mean, at some point this is a system for which at some feeling the Stoner criterion will be satisfied and the system will become ferromagnetic. But that implies that the chemical potential has a kink at that transition and it needs not necessarily continue growing when you dock below the transition. If it doesn't happen like in this case, so in the other phase with more electrons, you have a lower chemical potential. If you induce by some external means a charge density wave in the system, electrons will flow from the low density region towards the larger density region, so the system is unstable. That's what we will be trying to look at. Oh, this zero is mean you can I'm saying or you cut off things at some point and then I mean you can draw this diagram in many ways. This is that you have to include some exchange splitting, which I am writing it in this fashion, but this is just the fact that this is, for instance, for 2D, this is definitely the case. Oh, it's acceleration. Okay. Sorry for the mistake. I think it's better without that voltage there. Okay, how can you go and calculate things? There is an absolutely simple scheme, which is well known in statistical mechanics. This is the Ginzburg-Landau free energy, and then you choose parameters in such a way that there is a density-dependent critical temperature, so that tells you what is the magnetization above and below, above zero, below the critical temperature or the critical density, and you can use the same equation or the same expression for the free energy to analyze the compressibility, and you will get at this level, the mean field, you will get an extra contribution to the second derivative of the free energy with respect to density, to the inverse compressibility when you go below the the Curie point. And this is actually this is a very simple route in which you can make a second order phase transition look, you can turn it into a first order phase transition. Basically, the quartic term is becoming negative because of the renormalization induced by this extra field you're coupling to the system. And then what you will get is this kind of phase diagram. Instead of having this continuous line of second order phase transitions all the way to zero temperature, it will disappear at some point, and here there will be a critical point, and here a consistent region in which these two densities, I mean, you will have regions, not include Coulomb interactions, which is something I will discuss at the end, you will have coexistence between two different electronic densities. So, actually, you can look at it in a different way. And here I'm discussing, in connection with some magnetic systems, and here the two here that magnetized and pyrochlore, people have discussed the possibility of spin polaron solutions near TC. And actually, this is a language very much liked by, at least by experimentalists in magnetism. And if you read, this is the famous pioneering paper by the Jeans, which he discusses in general the phase diagram of the double exchange model. At the very end, he has a whole section discussing the possibility of non-homogeneous solutions. And the same thing was done by Littlewood and Mahumba recently for the pyrochlore. And that what those calculations suggest is that if for small doping levels, it's more favorable for the extra electrons to nucleate around them some ferromagnetic clouds and to form a kind of inhomogeneous solution, which leads, to an inhomogeneous solution. And that has very much the same physics as phase separation. And the argument is more or less here. I mean, let's suppose that you have these nice polaron solutions, which you find to be better than homogeneous solutions. But those polaron solutions, I mean, the polaron has a finite radius, so they cannot, they're good only up to some finite density of polaron, below which you gain more energy by destroying the polaron. building down the domain walls between the polaron and the surrounding environment. So if you compare the polaron solution with the homogeneous solution, they should cross at some radius, which is, or at some density, which goes like the inverse of the polaron radius. But typically, if it is a real crossing, you're already defining the first order phase transition somehow. So then you will always find that, I mean, here I'm assuming that the polaron solution basically is linear in the number of polarons. I'm making low density arguments, if you like, which are a bit tricky because at finite temperatures, polaron gas will be non-degenerate, and then the entropy of the polaron gas has some logarithmic dependence. But let's assume that this general idea is more or less correct. Then this crossing, same as first order phase transition, and actually it's more convenient for the system to phase separate into a dense homogeneous phase and something with no carriers at all. So these calculations already point out to the possibility that these two systems, the magnetized and the pyrochlore, will be at least for some dopings unstable against phase separation, electronic phase separation. And probably many of you are aware of similar calculation for doped mode systems. Okay, as a simple exercise, what you can do is calculate in full detail an itinerant ferromagnet, which becomes magnetic because of Sonner's criteria. So if you use, for instance, Hubbard model or an extended Hubbard model with a ferromagnetic exchange coupling, you can carry this program all the way to the end. You can basically, the point is that, let's suppose we are zero temperature. You can calculate the energy now, that we don't need to worry about free, the difference between free energy and energy. You can calculate the energy as function of the magnetization, go to quartic order, and if you neglect fluctuation, this is your phi force, your Ginzburg-Landau expansion. And here, the dependence on the density is hidden in the dependence on the unperturbed chemical potential. So the chemical potential of the in the paramagnetic space. You can proceed, and you can, assuming, and the nice thing is that you know what is the derivative of the unperturbed or chemical potential with respect to density. It's nothing but the inverse of the density of state. At the transition, you have to tune your interaction in such a way that Stoner's criterion is satisfied. So the U, let's forget for the moment about Z. U goes also like the inverse of the density of space. So basically, at the transition, you have only one energy scale, which is the density of space and its derivatives. And depending on this dimensionless combination of derivatives of the density of states at the transition, you may get phase separation or not. So for instance, for a band like this, actually, where raw density of state, you will not get phase separation, but you can imagine situations where you're near a saddle point, for instance, where this thing, this inequality is violated and the system is unstable against phase separation. You have probably noticed that this is a mean field argument, so it's only valid outside the critical region, which you can estimate using the Ginzburg-Landau criterion. But if, for instance, you find a first order transition away from that critical region, then this analysis is possibly correct. I mean, there's no reason there's no need to go beyond mean field. And in particular, for this case, for this analysis, which is done at zero temperature, so actually this should apply to a quantum critical point, then this critical region vanishes. I mean, assuming that the dynamic exponent is free, for instance. Even at two dimensions, the system is already above its critical dimension, so it should be all right. At zero temperature, this kind of mean field picture. Now you can use similar mean field arguments to use generic properties of the quantum critical point, using these two references we have. Make use of the same schemes and give rise to the same results. By the way, typically near a quantum critical point, you have that the critical temperature goes like d over d plus t. So the slope of t curie, for instance, versus doping becomes infinite at zero temperature. That is a very strong dependence on the doping, which, according to the mean field arguments I have been using before, in which basically the dependence of things on the doping were included in the derivative of Tc with respect to doping. If that thing becomes infinite, that's a clear signal of phase separation according to the previous argument. That is not completely correct near a quantum critical point because you cannot expand things near t equals 0. Basically, you cannot go below t equals 0. But nevertheless, you can use these mean field expressions, which are valid outside the critical region. This is basically the same kind of expression you actually get for the specific heat. And then if you put here t equals 3, for instance, and take the second derivative of this thing, you will see that this second derivative blows up. Basically, what is happening is that the electronic compressibility is picking up the same divergence as the specific heat. It doesn't become negative. This argument, and this is something which happens only at final temperature because of these P-prep factors. What it implies is that the compressibility does not necessarily become, never actually within this scheme becomes negative, but it becomes infinite. So the system is highly compressible, infinitely compressible, very near this critical region, which, as I said, becomes narrower and narrower as you go towards the equal zero. So you have a highly, in addition of the magnetic degrees of freedom, you have a highly compressible system and a strong coupling between the magnetic critical fluctuations and the charge fluctuations, which you get out of the disarmament. Another case you can study within this at this simple level is the dot mod insulator within mean field. So whether a mean field argument applied for the couplet, which is a two-dimensional system, is unclear. But if you assume that you have a three-dimensional system or something like that, and you rely on these techniques, you will also get space separation for a very simple reason. When you start to dope the upper Hubbard band, I mean, this is your undoped system, and now the most naive picture of the doping process implies that you start doping the upper Hubbard band. Now you will start raising the chemical potential. It will go up very little because here the density of states is very high. Because actually this band for the bipartite lattice is very flat. And actually here you have in three dimensions a square root singularity. But then in addition, these extra carriers will lower the gap. So the chemical potential picks up two contributions. A more or less normal one, which moves it upwards, and another one which takes it downwards. The one which takes it downwards will always win because it's linear in the number of carriers. That is relatively easy to prove. So you will find that very near the transition, an homogeneous system described in this way is always unstable against phase separation. Now I'd like to go, probably I don't need this transparency, you have heard a lot about the manganese. In the manganese there are different regions of interest. I mean, this is a phase diagram. And in the undoped or in the lightly doped system, basically there are two relevant interactions. One is the double exchange mechanism, which plays a role, first of all, because in 3D manganese carriers are delocalized within planes. And second, is that even if you started, like other people have, from a ferromagnetic conduit system, as soon as you have some dopants, you have a double exchange mechanism playing a role. And then, in addition, there are direct anti-ferromagnetic interaction between the core spins. And that also leads to phase separation, as I said already implicit in the Jens calculation and worked out by many people afterwards, including us. But then you can also consider what happens at relatively large doping, where this second scale, this anti-ferromagnetic coupling, is smaller than the ferromagnetic coupling induced by the double exchange mechanism itself, which is of order 6. So I will just concentrate on the double exchange model alone, which is very nice because it's a strongly correlated system but with a single energy scale. So basically, if you forget about the details of what's going on here, everything should depend on temperature or magnetic field, its units of T, and the density. We have looked at it in different ways. Here there are different calculations, different ways of calculating the properties of the double exchange model, but they add up to the same thing. And it's the crucial thing, as I said, the kind of phase separation we're thinking of only takes place near the QE temperature. So we need some technique which allows us to analyze things at finite temperatures. So for instance, exact diagonalization or the usual Monte Carlo technique applied to this model do not allow you to resolve small temperature fluctuations. But in any case, these are different approximations from exact but infinite dimensions, which for crystal, this is a Schwinger boson treatment of the double exchange system, and this is ordinary mean field. And in all cases, there is a region at low doping around the melt temperature of these systems where the double exchange mechanism leads to instabilities of an homogeneous ferromagnet or an homogeneous paramagnetic phase. So indeed, you will expect, I must warn you that the really interesting, at least for applications, manganese are the ones around here, 0.3. None of these calculations give you phase separation at such large dopings. But definitely you get a negative compressibility at small dopings, and it implies that the compressibility is going to be, in any case, very large near the melt temperature at high, even at high dopings. So it implies, and I will discuss it a bit later, that indeed there is a strong coupling between charge and spin degrees of freedom through this mechanism I am discussing. Now the pyrochlores are another CMR compound. Actually, if you think of it, the Hamiltonian is not that different from, it has some, let's put it that way, double exchange feature. What you have is localized spins which have a magnetic transition of their own. So they have some direct exchange coupling of their own, interacting weakly with some conduction bar. And the conduction bar mediates some kind of double exchange ferromagnetic coupling. So you have the number of carriers is known to be very, very small. So you have a weakly doped system sitting on top of a ferromagnetic system because of some direct coupling, exchange coupling between manganese. And so this is the Hamiltonian. And this is what we have found. There is a phase transition from a paramagnetic to a ferromagnetic phase at zero doping. And the ferromagnetic phase is stable at very small dopings, putting sensible numbers for the interaction. But however, at very still very slow doping, at very small dopings where all these approximations still hold, you get a large region where the system would like to phase separate. This is again a mean field analysis. We have not been able so far to do any better, but definitely there is a large area. This is, by the way, in all the plots I have been showing to you so far, I have been plotting only the regions of the phase diagram in which the compressibility of an homogeneous system is actually negative. If you do a Maxwell construction, you will get a much wider area for the instabilities as well. It will spill into this region and into this. But definitely, in the pyrochlore, you expect phase separation. And I think it fits well with this picture of little Buddha Mayundar that also spin polarons are like. It won't matter. It will always mediate some. Well, it's not for a ferromagnet. Both J and J prime are ferromagnets. Both. So that's why I was saying that it's some kind of double exchange mechanism. Because the hopping electrons would like to have spins in different sizes, parallel, aligned in parallel fashion. So this is a very simple Hamiltonian, which definitely does not include all the complexities of the pyrochlore because there are still glass spaces and all that. But this is the best we have done so far. As far as I can tell, regarding this transition, this is what we will have done. basic idea I already told you. So then what? What would you expect?
I've been discussing all along what happens. What I've been saying is that the chemical potential in all these compounds picks up some anomalous dependence on density. So the thing is, how can you tell whether it is happening or not, or which experimental consequences can you derive from it? And the derivative of the chemical potential with respect to density, as I said, is the inverse of the compressibility. But roughly speaking, and neglecting things like the energy dependence of scattering times and things like that, the derivative of the chemical potential with temperature, which obviously should also be a constant, is the thermal power. So what you could expect in a compound like this, and we have made more detailed calculations for the case of the manganese, is that this thing is going to be anomalous as well near the transition. So instead of being a small quantity, I mean, this thing is of order T over the bandwidth in a normal metal. Instead of being of that order, which is of the order of microvolts per Kelvin in atomic units, you will get something. In our case, we found, and more or less, already the experiment, two orders of magnitude larger and peak around the equator. So this is something. Somewhere where you can pick up information about instability of the system.
Are there any experiments
in the manganese? In the manganese, there are many experiments on thermal power, and they definitely tend to show anomalously large peaks, like I said, two orders of magnitude above this microvolt per Kelvin scale near the equator.
Even at optimal
loading? Even at optimal loading. Exactly. No, I agree. So, we cannot say we explain absolutely everything.
No, but actually, I don't know. Maybe still
there is something. Well, of course.
How reliable is your conclusion that there is no separation of
well, first of all, it's a one bar calculation, and very well known. Orbitals per size that we were neglecting altogether. I mean, the reason why there is no phase separation at half doping is clear. We are using a system with electron hole symmetry, and there's no way to move the chemical potential if you have electron hole symmetry, which is what happens at half doping. So that's why phase separation goes away in our scheme at half doping. Exactly. But as you well know, there are actually two orbitals in the manganese. And then, in addition, it's also well known that there's a strong coupling to the lattice, either because of the Young-Teller formation of polarons, or it's also known that the longitudinal phonons of the long wavelengths are also strongly coupled to the lattice. Because
in a real system like the manganese
structure,
there is a different form.
Exactly.
Exactly.
That we never. I agree. Absolutely, I agree. And what I mean is that while you have some sort of instability, any other field you couple, here we say, well, you have a magnetic system and you couple it to the usual charge fluctuation. Any other field you add to it, like the Young-Teller polaron or acoustical phonon, will enhance the tendency towards phase separation, will make the system more unstable because it will give an extra an extra contribution to the compressibility at the transition. The point is that this magnetic mechanism we are thinking of have definitely the right side. I mean, they're always of the same scale as the bare compressibility, which is the inverse of the density of states. Okay, another thing which we were told, but they're not published so far, I mean, but at least my colleagues in Ireland has found is evidence for hysteresis at finite field. The thing is that this is your carbon parity phase diagram in the absence of phase separation. What will happen when you have phase separation? You will have here a first order, line of first order point, which ends up
at the critical point, very much like the liquid-vapor interface. And we have been told, also it has never appeared published so far, that there are indeed indications of hysteresis at finite fields, in a region of fields, and temperatures which more or less are in this area.
There are other experiments, the group with hyperbaration effect. They definitely saw these things like behavior at finite fields, but the very fine fields look like matches like 53 and very much affected. Also, companies like the point 3 and the 2 so consistent with the picture of
that. Is this supposed to show the hybridization measurement?
No.
The field should take the magnetic field.
Yeah, let me see. The field will be, for the magnetization, will not be uniquely determined by the applied.
I can draw it well, that means how it looks like. They separated this into ferromagnetic cluster, for instance, with electromagnetic background. And first, what you do, you polarize lithium leading this ferromagnetic cluster, this part. Then they start to grow until they fill the whole sample, and that's actually the full situation. So here, you really have cooked all manganese barrels and stuff. When you go down, then it starts to integrate into the and then you have to hit the hysteresis. So it looks as though it's kind of hysteresis, but it is two or three there. And that actually shown also in their sample.
So this is supposed to be above the equilibrium TC? Is that the idea?
This is actually close to the separation region, and this mixed material, this functional composition, it has a diagonal which looks like something very this is under this is. And the state separation is apparently into charge orders, anti-magnetic region and ferromagnetic region.
I wanted to discuss a little bit the opposite effect, the interactions which tend to go against the separation, which basically is the Coulomb effect. And this you can take into account at least in an approximate way using RPA. I mean, you have a system with, let's say, a bare negative compressibility.
studied, you studied, you have calculated the properties of your homogeneous system, and it happens to be unstable. But then you can do this kind of diagrammatic analysis, or you solve it. You solve the, what is the electrostatic potential created by these charge fluctuations self-consistently, and then it happens that your actual dielectric function will look like that, assuming that this, the Q dependence here is weak. So you put all the Q dependence in the Coulomb potential. And then it gives you, if this is negative, this thing has a zero at some particular, I mean, the, now the Dresden compressibility is positive at Q equals zero. Basically, you cannot charge up the macroscopic system. But this gives you a typical size at which this compensation between the energy you gain from forming domains and the energy you lose from having charges in your system are more or less equal. So we interpret this Q as the inverse of typical domain size, which can be large if your compressibility is negative and large. So this. Actually, for the in the case of the manganese near optimal doping, and then this thing turns out to be of the order of few Lattice spaces, which is of the order of the polarons people experimentally speak about, with X-rays and so on. But there are situations, you can imagine situations, for instance, at low doping, where this Q is very small, meaning that you will get very large from it.
Essentially, the argument is that this tendency towards separation is survived. Modified, but not.
Not
it, this is a very crude argument. This is the best we have done so far. But it definitely tells you that there will be some scale. You can improve upon this scale by putting domain wall energy and things like that, but we think this contains already the basic. opposing interactions in the mode, in the system.
So,
I think that's it. The
crucial aspect for this is that definitely people have looked so far, and probably for good reason, to magnetic transitions in stoichiometric compounds like iron or nickel, considering only spin fluctuations. What this is telling you is that in some compounds, at least, there is a strong coupling between the magnetic fluctuations and the charge fluctuations, at least near the transition temperature. So if you want to make a full analysis of what's going on, it's not enough to consider magnetic fluctuations alone. And of course, once you add a charge fluctuation to the system, we don't say it will explain colossal magnetoresistance, but definitely you have a way of strongly enhancing the resistance of your compound near the magnetic transition, and it's also a mechanism which will go away if you apply a sufficiently strong field and so on. And the basic message is that you have to take into account charge fluctuations as well as spin fluctuations, at least in quite a few classes of materials like the manganese. We could have extended this calculation of the dielectric compound, of the response function. We don't know. I mean, at first sight, we would expect that things are damped with some damping, which is proportional to the absolute value of omega and all that. But we would have not looked at what is the typical energy scale.
Once you have this first order, because the phase separation,
Actually, I think that is one of the reasons why there are many stained glass spaces near magnetic
transitions in many systems. I mean, that's again, any small inhomogeneity doesn't need to be very large. If the system is highly compressible, will pin charges and electrons in its vicinity. So I think, and I discussed it with Antonio Castroneto, one of the reasons this Griffith space scenario for heavy fermions may be working well is because you don't need the large inhomogeneities throughout the sample for this order to play a major role. I mean, it can have a very big role because the system is so compressible that any amount of disorder will make it more advanced.
So that should show up in a direct. You should see something funny going on in the bulk modulus in these different spaces.
I don't know, probably. It's just, I guess, the idea is that if the system is highly